The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
My interest in cryptozoology started when I was about 9 years old. My family had picked this one particular campground to vacation at that summer. Of course, the lake was crystal clear, but there was an odd thing about this campground. It couldn't get me in the rowboat or anything. They decided for family movie night, the Patterson-Gimlin film and The Legend of Boggy Creek. So that is what started my interest into all things unexplained.
You're listening to the Cryptid Creatures Podcast with Todd and Brian. If you've had an encounter and want to be on the show, email us at info@cryptidcreatures.co or visit our website at www.cryptidcreatures.net.
This is the Cryptid Creatures Podcast. I am Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Todd. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Brian. How you doing, man? Are you ready for our guest tonight?
I am ready.
We are bringing on Shatan Noir.
Yes, she is the owner and editor-in-chief of Squatch GQ magazine.
Yes, she is. She's got a lot of stories. She's a cryptozoologist. I think she's really into the sea creatures.
She is. In fact, I think she talked about some of those at the last show we saw, right?
Well, let's not waste any more time, man. Let's bring her on.
Yeah, man. Let's get her.
Hey, Shatan. Thanks for coming on and talking to us tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time. We got to talk to you a little bit at the Michigan Bigfoot Conference up there.
Yeah, that was a wonderful conference. I'm so pleased with the turnout that they had, and Everybody was just, you know, really nice.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really cool. We had a good time, met a lot of cool people like yourself, and you were a guest speaker there as well.
Yes.
Do you do a lot of that? Do you guest speak a lot these days?
Oh, yeah, I do. That's between running the magazine company and doing presentations, that's what fills up most of my time. So I do speaking engagements at paracons, cryptozoology events, libraries, podcasts. So I do this quite a bit. Actually, this week alone, I've got 6 different podcasts that I'm going to be on. So,
oh, wow. Well, I hope we're the best one.
Yeah, right.
You've got a huge background. I don't know where to begin. You have your own podcast, Into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal Podcast. You have Squatch GQ Magazine. You're the author of Lake Monsters, Odd Creatures, and Great Lakes, Mothman and Other Flying Creatures of the Midwest. You're just heavily into cryptozoology. You are a cryptozoologist yourself. What got you started in all this? Where's your background?
So my interest in cryptozoology started when I was about 9 years old, and it was during the summertime, and my family had picked this one particular campground to vacation at that summer, and it was called Crystal Lake Campground. Of course, the lake was crystal clear, but there was an odd thing about this campground, and that was that they had a 6-foot alligator in a dog kennel. With a cement pond, and they would tell all the kids that the alligator came out of the lake. So that right there meant I was not swimming, I was not going fishing, I was not going anywhere near the water, because obviously those people pulled that thing out of there, and that's probably, you know, that we're going to be eaten. So couldn't get me in the rowboat or anything. I just, nope. And then one particular weekend, they decided for family movie night on Saturday night that the perfect movies to show was the Patterson-Gimlin film and The Legend of Boggy Creek.
All right.
And 9-year-old me spent the next 45 minutes hiding in the women's bathroom because those things are out there and they were going to come through the campground, grab the little kids and run off with them. So two very nice older women escorted me back to our truck camper. And after that, I started getting a subscription to Fate magazine and started going to the used bookstore at the end of the road and would buy anything and everything on the paranormal and cryptozoology. And back then everything was logged under the, you know, umbrella term of new age. So now we have, you know, different categories. You've got cryptozoology, you've got the paranormal, you've got high strangeness, you've got ufology. So that is what started my interest into all things unexplained.
Gotcha. Cool. Tell us about Squatch GQ magazine.
So Squatch GQ magazine, I used to be the head writer of, and the former owner, John Kuykendall, gave me the company as my Christmas present this year. And so I have made some changes to it. I kept the company name of Squatch GQ because everybody was familiar with it, but some of the other magazine names have changed. So for cryptozoology magazines, there is Squatch GQ magazine, which is a little bit more lighthearted, general, you know, cryptozoology information. And then there's Cryptozoology Digest, which is more analytical, more evidence-based, more science-based. So those two are, I've got the winter and summer editions out. And then new to the magazine line, we had a paranormal magazine called G-Hunter, and it did not, the name of it just did not go over well with most people. So the name of that magazine got changed to Into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal Magazine, which used to be the name of my paranormal podcast, which is on hiatus because I do much more with the magazines and speaking engagements. So I still have it, might take it out, brush it off, you know, get the Mothman's off of it and, you know, run some podcasts here or there. But right now I replaced the former name of the magazine with the new magazine, which is Into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal Magazine. We also have a magazine that is based on dinosaurs, prehistoric creatures, paleontology, fossil hunting, and that one is called Dinosauria and Prehistoric Creatures. There's two issues out on that also, a winter and a summer, which are now, they're all currently available. And this fall, I will be producing a additional magazine on rock hounding and prospecting for people who are like me, who like to go looking for treasure and prying it out of the ground or, you know, wading through water to get it. So those are the magazines that I'm working on currently. But you never know. I could decide to make a couple more. Sleep's overrated anyways.
Are those actual print magazines?
Yes.
Paper magazines?
Yes, yeah. They are available on Amazon. You can either order them as a paper book, or if you're not into having, like, you know, magazines and books laying around, you can get the ebook version for Kindle.
Okay,
cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you how
do you offer a subscription of any kind, or is it just,
you know, I found that unless you are a large magazine company that's doing hundreds of thousands of magazines per year, really the best way to go is Amazon. So I don't offer any subscriptions just because things can get lost in the mail, or people start a subscription, end a subscription. It becomes a bit of a annoyance after a while. So this way people can just order it straight off of Amazon, or if they see me at events, I usually have the magazines and books with me at different paranormal conventions or cryptid cons, and they can get the magazines from me there.
Okay.
Tell us about your books.
So currently I have, for cryptozoology, I have a book on lake monsters and odd creatures of the Great Lakes. I have Mothman and Other Flying Cryptids of the Midwest, which will be relaunching very soon. I was having that published from another publisher. They are no longer available to do that, so I am taking the book back and will be publishing it myself through my company. So those two are available. I also have a children's book called Tegan Grave versus Bigfoot, or The Marvelous Misadventures of Tegan Gray. So, and that is actual photography of her in different little costumes going around my yard, interacting with Bigfoot and other creatures as she tries to solve the mystery of why Bigfoot crashed her tea party. And so that's a children's book. So cool. It's kids have really liked that's it because she dresses up in little costumes and stuff like that. So that's also available on Amazon.
Cool. Okay. What's your favorite? Nice. So what's your favorite cryptid?
Lake monsters.
Oh yeah,
I have to say lake monsters are my absolute favorite. Just because they're kind of like the Schrodinger's cat of the cryptid world. You can't prove that they're in the water, but you can't disprove that they're in the water. And our Great Lakes, our oceans, our seas are so vast that new species are being found every year. So why can't we say that it's plausible that there might be a marine reptile of mysterious, you know, I don't want to say origins, but, you know, a mystery prehistoric marine reptile out there that is still swimming in the waters and just nobody's, you know, documented them yet.
Yep. That's what I've always said too.
It's very possible to me that a plesiosaur, is that what we think this thing is?
Yes. Plesiosaurs were the ones with the long necks, humped backs, and the small heads. The mosasaurs were more alligator, crocodilian, monitor lizard type creatures that had the large heads, the long jaws.
If you think about it, a creature like that, a dinosaur that lived in the water, or any creature that lived in the water for that reason, for that matter, if you wanted to say that a meteorite destroyed the dinosaurs, okay, well, it's in the water. It can go down deep.
Right.
It can avoid, you want to say a flood destroyed the earth? Well, it's in the water. So
yeah, yeah, they're still in the water.
Anything swimming out there,
yep,
dinosaur related or not, I think could have survived anything. Possibly. And I do believe that those creatures are out there because of that reason.
Well, the plesiosaurs and the mosasaurs are considered prehistoric marine reptiles. They weren't related to the dinosaurs. Now, mosasaurs were, their ancient ancestors were monitor lizards. And we do know, like, things like the Komodo dragons, they do swim from island to island. And so they retained that ability to go into the water and swim. But we do know that we still have marine turtles, like your leatherback turtles. We still have saltwater crocodiles, freshwater alligators, crocodilians of very different types. You know, when you look at like the Gharial and caimans compared to your American alligator, and your American crocodile, because people have released them so often that we do have American crocodiles, prehistoric snakes, sharks, all of these, you know, even whales, all of these water-based life forms, they are still living on today, even like octopus and giant squid. So why can't there be a marine reptile that is very similar in appearance to the plesiosaur or the mosasaur still swimming out there and living in the watery depths today. Up until like 10 years ago, everybody thought that Moby Dick was just a work of fiction. And lo and behold, there's been documented at least two pure white whales, sizable whales swimming in the ocean. And so we know that that is now possible. So just when people say, oh, that's impossible, that could never exist or you know, happen, lo and behold, something does happen, and you're like, yep, now explain that.
Yep, exactly. They said the same thing about the mountain gorillas.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, you know, primates alone. We discover new primates, usually one every 3 years or so, and everything from the little tiny mouse lemurs, that Mira Major from Expedition Bigfoot found when she was with National Geographic on expedition, all the way up to mountain gorillas. So even bonobos, which is kind of
like, those aren't that old. Yeah,
no. And you know, people, oh, that's just a chimpanzee. No, it's actually a different, unique, you know, primate from a chimpanzee. So every year, new things are being found, and it just depends on if you are in the right place at the right time of where these creatures are. Because they're not going to go looking for you. You're looking for, you know, you're looking for a needle in a haystack, and, oh, hey, is that new?
Yep. They're going to avoid us at all costs.
So. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it says here that you're the lead investigator for the Michigan chapter of the North American Dogman Project. Not to shift gears, but what's your involvement in that, and what's your thoughts on Dogman?
So I believe Dogman isn't anything like what we see with Bigfoot. Bigfoot, I do believe, is a natural occurring species here on Earth, and we found evidence of them in the fossil record. But Dogman, I believe Dogman is something different. I think it's either interdimensional or it's alien in nature. And they just come here either as a opportunity to observe humans and see what the human race is doing, or possibly they come here to escape something, or they're sent here because they are banished from, you know, where they originally evolved from. So we haven't found anything in the fossil record that suggests that these creatures are, you know, natural occurring. Even to say, you know, we do know that there's dire wolves, but the dire wolves were quadruped. They weren't bipedal. And more often than not, what people report seeing is a bipedal canine creature that is running on two legs, which is very different than a four-legged canine. So there is still a lot to investigate and information to collect on these creatures to know exactly what they are, where they've come from, and what interactions they want to have with humans, with them being an apex predator, similar along the lines of a Bigfoot. Obviously, if you run across one of them in the woods, you're the lower species. Don't care what kind of gun you have with you, how good you are at hiking or survival. If you come across a dog man in the woods, chances are you're going to be hunted.
Yeah. Todd loves werewolves.
You're based in Michigan, right? Do you get out and look for these guys or Bigfoot or whatnot?
So in years past, I have. I do love to go hiking. I love to go exploring out into the woods. And you never quite, you can go out looking for Bigfoot and you might find everything else. So you can never say, oh, I'm just going out looking for this one cryptid. Because chances are when you say, oh, I'm going to go out looking for this, you're going to find everything except that. You know, you're walking over, like, you know, dog man tracks and, you know, stuff like that. So Have not really been out this year doing any investigations, just because I've been so big busy with the magazines and traveling to Paracons and doing library presentations. But I did have an interesting situation where, as I was traveling to a Bigfoot event up in Menominee, Michigan, through Michigan's UP, I had stopped at a rest area that's right on the Lake Michigan shoreline. And I have a little miniature pincher who travels with me. Usually it's her and her two children who travel with me. They're all small-sized dogs. And I was walking her up and down the beach just to get her some exercise. And as we were walking along, I came across these very large foot tracks that are very canine in appearance. And interesting thing about these foot tracks is I wear a size 10 shoe, and these foot tracks were half the size of my foot in width and length. And they traveled to the water, and I did not see where they traveled back out of the water. So I'm guessing that they were in the water for a little bit and then came back up.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Now, the other interesting fact is that these tracks were only about 100 feet from a very busy rest stop where people are pulling in all day and all night to use the facilities to walk up and down the beach. And here there are these very big foot tracks. Now, I did take pictures of them because I'm headed to a cryptid conference, and I'm like, ha ha, I'm, you know, Ken Gigahart's going to be there. Barnaby Jones with Cap Wisconsin is going to be there. Allison Dorland was going to be there. So I'm like, I'm going to show everybody these pictures and get everybody else's take. And they're all like, yep, that's definitely canine, but that's either a very, very big wolf or it's something else. And I'm like, yeah, it came straight out of the woods, went into the water, and then wherever the return foot tracks were not lateral to that line of tracks. So something went into the water and came out at a different point and went back, hopefully, into the woods away from humans. But it was very interesting coming across that set of tracks.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
What Paracon are you going to next?
My next one is actually not this weekend, but next weekend. It's Michigan Paracon, which is up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. It's one of the biggest Paracons in the country that is just straight paranormal and cryptids and UFOs. I know that some of the horror fests or scare fests sometimes have paranormal like celebrities and stuff like that, but this one is just it's just for the paranormal, cryptids and UFOs. So it's one of the biggest ones in the country, and it goes Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So it's right there at the Keweenaw Casino in Sault Ste. Marie.
Hmm. Brian and I are thinking, why didn't we look into this? Or did we?
I think we did, but I don't think we had enough time. So or they were already filled up. I don't remember.
So that'll bring a lot of people in for sure.
They have a huge turnout every year. The stage area auditorium is massive, and it is always filled, wall to wall with people when the presentations are going on. So, and they have everybody from the Ghost Hunters to the Ghost Brothers, presenters like myself, who are just starting to get well known. Expedition Bigfoot guys will be there. Russell Accord, Cliff from Finding Bigfoot will be there. So quite a variety of different presenters and speakers, and something for everyone. Doesn't matter if you're just into the paranormal or you're just into UFOs or just into cryptozoology. There will be people there that will be talking about things that you're interested in, and most of them are in the vendors room too. So it's always nice to walk through the vendor room and talk to people and have conversations with the different presenters. So it's definitely worth going, even if you just want to go up and walk around and collect business cards for future podcasts. Because
yeah.
Lord knows, I've done that over the years for my own podcast and now for the magazine. I walk around with, collecting cards, and I have a little notebook, and it's like, would you like to, do an interview for such and such magazine? And if they say yes, I hand them the notebook so that they can write their email address in it. And then I set it up after, everybody gets back home. So
yeah.
It's a worthwhile event to go to.
Speaking of the magazine, we met Johnny Kay at the Iowa Paranormal.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Festival.
Yeah. Last year.
Last year. So that was pretty cool. And Bodine, the Bigfoot. Was
oh, yep.
Him.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm friends with Bodine. Okay. Yep.
Is that his real name? That's really not his real name, though, is it?
I'm friends with him, and I'm friends with his handler. His handler is Jason Arthur, and I call him my big brother.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, those guys are pretty fun.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
So what do you normally speak about when you're at these conferences? Do you talk about kind of the everything? Do you get into the paranormal, alien side of things?
Well, lately I have been talking a lot about lake monsters, even though I'm well-versed in all cryptids, but because lake monsters are kind of my thing, that is what I generally get to do presentations on. Now, like at the Bigfoot conference that we were just at a couple of weeks ago, if it's a small conference like that, I will generally open it up to the room and ask them what they would like to hear me talk about. And it's always weird because I will give them a choice of like four, Bigfoot being one, Dogman being one, Lake Monsters being one, Mothman being one, or sometimes I switch out Mothman for reptilians. And it's interesting when you're at a Bigfoot conference and everybody votes for like the Lake Monsters or the Mothman or something that's totally not Bigfoot related.
Right.
And so I think, even though everybody's there to learn about Bigfoot, people are just as interested in all the different other cryptids that are out there, and they want to learn about those too. So I generally, open it up to the room to see what they want to hear about. But a big convention like the one next weekend, they definitely booked me for my Lake Monster presentation. So that's what they're getting. They're getting Lake Monsters.
Yeah, I think I voted for the Lake Monster presentation at that last show.
I voted for Dogman, I think.
Yeah.
I know there was a few who voted Dogman, but Lake Monsters beat it out, and it was like, wow, okay, here we go.
Let's talk about Bigfoot for a minute while we're here. Okay. I mean, what's your whole grasp on that from start to finish?
So I do believe that Bigfoot are a natural occurring species here on Earth. They are definitely well represented in the fossil records. I think that they have learned through a process of watching human beings that human beings are not necessarily very good with other large predators and to avoid us, especially, when we go into the woods with guns, looking to shoot deer and any other living things in the forest. So I think Bigfoots have gotten very, very good at blending in with their surroundings and avoiding humans. And it's only when the Bigfoot chooses to interact with us that we get the chance sightings of seeing them, or if the weather conditions are right and they leave a foot track, or there's hair left behind and people are actually committed enough to carry a forensic kit with them when they go hiking to collect that tuft of hair and preserve it and then send it in to the right laboratories to get it analyzed to see, is this primate? Is it bear? Is it, you know, deer? You know, what is this hair sample from? Another thing is the eDNA, but that is quite expensive to process and run. And you have to be very careful with how it's collected so that there's no cross-contamination. You know, you have to be like gloved up and masked so that you're not breathing any, you know, DNA into the sample as you're collecting it. And so that there's no, oh yeah, there's human DNA in here. It's like, oh, of course there is, because you either sneezed or coughed while collecting it, and that cross contaminates it. So, but with Bigfoot, I do believe that they are out there, and there are many of them. There's more than people realize. I had a young man arguing with me over the weekend when I was at Hannah House in Indianapolis that there's only one Bigfoot. And I said, no, there are many Bigfoot Sasquatches. I said, that's like saying there's only one squirrel in this park. I said, there's many of them. Wherever you have farms or cornfields or deer, you have the possibility of having Bigfoot and of having Dogman. So, and that's, I think people just think that there's one Bigfoot and he lives out in, you know, Oregon, and you know, occasionally he vacations elsewhere. And it's like, no, there's actually quite a few of these creatures, and there's not just one.
Yeah, coast to coast. I mean, they're everywhere.
And Florida.
Yes, call them skunk apes down there.
Skunk apes, yeah.
Yeah, skunk ape, yep.
Do you think these things have been around longer than us?
Oh, I think they have. Going back, if we follow the fossil record, going back, these guys would have been, when primates were coming to that fork in the road of, do we want to stay wild and a more primitive species like apes, gorillas, orangutans, or do we want to start using tools, start to be not just hunter-gatherers, but planting crops, building structures to live in, painting and drawing on walls and surfaces, documenting what we've seen, trying to form a written language almost. That's where you start to see the split. And I believe that the Bigfoots went with the wild, you know, natural, kind of like apes and gorillas, and human beings, we went the other way of the Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon man and started to evolve into a much more advanced intelligent species.
So do you think that Bigfoot is part human? Is it possible?
Well, human beings are primates.
Right.
Gorillas are primates. Chimpanzees are primates. And if you look at the DNA, there is only a few percentages that separate chimpanzees from human beings. Right. So to say, are they human-like? Well, we're ape-like.
Right.
And so you can't compare one without comparing the other. And it's just a process of how they interact, how they choose to use the natural world around them. We do know that chimpanzees, we do know that orangutans, certain ape species will use tools. They use little sticks to get ants and stuff, termites out of trees. So they do use tools. And they have that thought process of, if I use this and this, I can do that. We also know that they're intelligent enough to learn American Sign Language and be able to communicate with us as a separate species. And they're, you know, they've also demonstrated that certain apes have tried to teach other apes or chimpanzees sign language or a communication. And that is really a determining factor when you're looking at intelligence of how do species communicate and do they have a language of their own? Do they have a writing ability? Do they have a way to communicate with others? And we do know that some of these larger primates are showing that they can communicate.
Right.
Yeah, look at Coco the gorilla.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So let's switch gears here then. What's your thought on the Jersey Devil?
Now, Jersey Devil is an interesting one because there's not really anything in the fossil record about it, but there is a lot of folktale and superstition about it. And this is one of those cases where it could have been a thought form that was made real. And I know that there has been different experiments throughout history. Albert Einstein was one of them that believed that if you put enough thought into something, you could make it manifest. And so if enough people talk about a certain paranormal activity, a certain ghost, a certain supernatural creature, then if they're talking about it in a certain area, then after a while, something will start to manifest and develop and people will start reporting seeing things. And I think that's possibly what happened with the Jersey Devil. You have a mother, if the story is true, you have a mother who was overwhelmed with children. She's going to have her last and final child. And she is so overwhelmed with it that she just curses it. And I'm a firm believer of watch what you say, because if you say it with enough energy, with enough conviction and belief behind it, it will manifest and become true. And so it said that when the baby was born, it was human, but after she cursed it, it started taking on the appearance of this devil type creature and escaped from the home and then has been basically haunting the woods around the Pine Barrens ever since then. So, you know, without actually knowing what species it could be, or is this a human, you know, creature, hominid, or a weird type of entity, we will never know. But we do know that people see weird things on a daily basis, and they have no explanation for what they see. So is it interdimensional? Is it something that's coming from one dimension into ours, and we just see a brief glimpse of it, and then it pops back out? These are weird, you know, weird situations that we don't quite have the answers to yet, but all we do have is the eyewitness reports and the stories that go along with them and contribute to them.
Well, I think technology is getting better and better, and I think eventually if those things are out there, we're going to see them.
Well, hopefully. I mean, I know with CCTVs, it's interesting what they do get video evidence of, and who knows, maybe in the next 5 years we will be able to, you know, put more definition on what some of these cryptid creatures are and how mm-hmm. they get here, how they leave, why we only see them at certain times, and where they go the rest of the time.
Yep.
Do you think it's possible that the Jersey Devil could be a pterodactyl or dinosaur?
Now, that's another interesting one that I have heard. And with the pterodactyl idea, there are certainly enough reports out there where people are stating that they see a pterodactyl type creature flying around. And there's two possibilities. Either, yes, there is a pterosaur type creature. Pterodactyl is a species. Pterosaur is the genus.
Okay.
And there are over 180 different species of pterosaur out there that we have fossil records of.
Yeah. Could be any one of those.
There's the possibility of something out there. Now, I have seen, and I know there's people out there that hate me when I say this, but here where I live in Michigan, we have a lot of cranes and water birds, herons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, if these birds are flying directly overhead with their feet sticking out from underneath of them, they do look very pterosaur in appearance, especially when you're just getting the black outline of them because of the sun and you're seeing them fly over top of you. They are perfectly silhouetted against the sky and they look like pterosaurs. I even jokingly call them pterosaurs because it's like, I can't tell what kind, if that's a crane or a heron, but it definitely looks like a pterosaur to me. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that there are very large species of water-going long-legged birds in the Pine Barrens in Jersey, and that when these guys take flight, that is the optical illusion that they're giving, is looking like a pterosaur-type creature. And when they're flying through trees or over houses, you might just get a brief look at them before they're gone. And this could be possibly what people are seeing, but I never, you know, discount anything, because not a lot of people go lurking into swamps, into bayous, into forests, into uncomfortable, you know, situations where you put yourself really at risk to see what kind of things are living there. So there could be natural occurring species that are, you know, living in those areas that we just have not documented yet, because the times of the year when people go there might not be the times of the year when they're there.
Right. Especially the Pine Barrens. That's just so vast there.
Yes. Yes. Huh. And, you know, they've documented, you know, these big water holes and stuff like that in the Pine Barrens, and lots of interesting, you know, areas. So you really, you know, you can claim to know what's out there, but I could claim a lot of things and just be like, oh, I did not know that salamander lived in the swamp across the road from me. That's a new discovery for me. So people discover new things all the time, and it's always a fascination of what could be out there and what is left to find. I'm from the Great Lakes, and we have lots of lake monster reports. And they range from giant fish all the way down to dragon-type creatures, you know, the amalgamations, even a merman report from Lake Superior. So there are...
Really?
Yes, the merman report.
I didn't hear that one.
The creature is actually called the Great Manitou Nibbinibbis. And he is considered by the Native Americans to be the god of the lake. And the report that we have of when there was an eyewitness report of this creature, there were fur traders with a Native American woman who were making their way around Lake Superior. And they were collecting fur hides, and they were having her help with negotiations between other tribes and what kind of fur pelts they wanted. So they had been on the lake for a couple of days, and they decided that they would stop at Pie Island because it looked like a good place to do some trapping. So they were just pulling their canoes up on to the banks of the island, and one of the men happened to look out into the water and saw what he thought was a 4-foot beaver, which would have been a huge pelt. That will make a poor man rich in a couple of days, because beaver pelts were worth quite a bit of money. And so as he's getting his gun, the Native American woman realizes what the commotion's about, and she's telling the men, no, you can't shoot that thing. That it's not a beaver. That's not what that is. And the men are like, no, that's clearly a beaver. And as this is going back and forth, the creature raises up in the water, and they can see, oh, nope, this has a human head and shoulders and arms, and it waves at them, and then it proceeds to dive underneath the water, and they can tell that the bottom end of it was very fish-like, and they're like, okay, that wasn't a beaver. And the woman is just horrified, and she's like, we need to get into the middle of the island now and start building a living, you know, area, something that, you know, we can hide out in for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And the men are like, no, we're going to go set some beaver traps and finish pulling these canoes up. And she's like, no, you don't understand. That was the great Nibba Nibbus. He's going to send a storm. And the men are like, whatever. So she goes into the middle of the island and starts building a shelter for them. And the men, you know, get the trap set, and they notice that the sky is turning very black and the wind is picking up all around them and seems to be blowing straight at the island. So they quickly start making their way into the middle of the island. They finally find the Native American woman and they help her start finishing up the shelter. And it's then that these raindrops start coming, and pretty soon a storm like none of them has ever seen starts hitting the island. And for the next 3 days and three nights, this storm rages. And on the fourth day, the sun returns, and she's like, don't you ever point a gun at that creature again. And so we now have the report of that is our merman report of Lake Superior, is the great Nibba Nibbus. And so, and that's part of the Native American legends.
Something else we can add to our list,
yeah,
of cryptids. That's awesome.
Did you say that you had a big fish report somewhere up there in Michigan, one of the lakes?
So there's also the Native American legend of the giant sturgeon, which was said to be a 30 to 40 plus sized fish and was rumored to have dented in at least one ship hull on a steamer ship.
Wow.
And the report goes that as the boat was making its way across Lake Superior, it was suddenly hit by a wave from behind, but something also struck the front of the ship at the same time. Both of these occurred with so much force that it released the anchor chains from both ends of the ship and broke the housing. So they had to hand crank the chains and the anchors up. And when they got into port, they had somebody dive under the boat and look, and they said that the hull of the boat was dented under, you know, dented in. And so whatever had hit them with such a force that it caved in the hull of the boat. But whatever hit them also created a huge wave at the same time. So a lot of Native Americans believe that that was the great sturgeon. It hit them with its head, and then its tail, you know, slapped at the water and created the great wave also.
Cool.
Lake Michigan, for example, they say there's only like maybe five different species of fish in there, I've heard. I don't really know if I believe that, but I
do know with Lake Michigan, I do know that there's perch, there's sunfish, there's salmon. There's a couple of different species of salmon. There's your sturgeon. And those are, you know, the salmon, they fish for all the time. Perch are always good. I know that's what we fished for when we were kids there, and would fish off of the docks in Grand Haven and Holland, Michigan. So it was always salmon or perch that we were fishing for. Now, Lake Michigan is interesting because the only monster reports we have are giant turtle reports from the Lake Michigan area. The other Great Lakes have like the sea serpents, the plesiosaurs, the, you know, water dragons and things like that. But Lake Michigan only has the two giant turtle reports, the Stearns Bayou monster and the Lake Leelanau monster.
Those lakes are huge. No matter what anyone says, there could be anything in those lakes as big as those lakes are.
Well, Lake Superior, certainly.
Especially Superior being so deep.
Oh, yes. Lake Superior is so deep that her bottom depths are so cold that there's a reason that they say that Lake Superior never gives up her dead. And that's because the bottom of the lake is so cold that bodies do not bloat. Mm-hmm. And so there's a shipwreck down there, the USS Kamloops. And there is actually a human body down there. And divers who have gone down, that's a technical dive. And the only reason people go down and dive on that wreck is scientists who are, or marine archaeologists who want to verify the ship's, you know, whether it's still intact, whether, you know, it's getting torn up from anchor strikes. But people who have gone down and actually gone through that ship have been scared out of their minds because a human corpse comes floating out of one of the rooms with the wake that they make as they're swimming through. And it follows them and seems to be interacting with them when actually it's just a human body in water. But if any ship should be haunted, that one should, because it's got definite human remains on it. And another ship, the Edmund Fitzgerald, also has human remains around it. The skulls of the crew have been found outside of the ship, and it's a national maritime law and a federal maritime law that if there's human remains around a shipwreck, you are not allowed to bring anything up from the ship.
Right. That's the burial site.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The famous Edmund Fitzgerald song was written about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're in a prime spot there where you're at in Michigan. You've got all kinds of stuff going on between the Dogman, the Bigfoot, the sea creatures, the giant fish, you name it, they're all there. So you definitely picked a good location to be.
Michigan's definitely a hotbed.
Doing your
sure.
studying. And we're glad
we're close. We get quite a few Bigfoot reports, Dogman reports, UFO reports, lots of paranormal locations to go investigate. Lake monsters are plenty because we've got three big Great Lakes around us. Only thing we're kind of missing is like the flying cryptids. Mm-hmm. So we don't get a whole lot of hosts.
Yeah, like nope. Mothman or Jersey Devil and whatnot.
Right.
Oh, and we have the Nain Rouge. The Nain Rouge is a Detroit original character legend. He was said to be the mortal enemy of Cadillac, the one who founded Detroit when he came over from Canada. And he was told not to engage the Nain Rouge. And lo and behold, he was out strolling along the Detroit River with his wife. And the Nain Rouge popped out of the bushes and he proceeded to beat him with his cane. And since then, the Nain Rouge has been the harbinger of doom for the city of Detroit.
Oh, okay.
And every March, we have a parade where we chase him through the city streets of Detroit. And we throw him in an old Cadillac and drive him down to Toledo, pick him out of the car.
That's awesome.
So what is it?
It is, well, the Nain Rouge is, the easiest explanation is he's a Lutin. So similar to like a leprechaun or a brownie or an imp.
Okay.
Not fairy-like, but very... well, Lutin is the term for anything describing leprechauns or small creatures like that, that have a very distinct form to them. Short, kind of chubby, think garden gnome, but evil, dressed all in red.
Is it kind of like
we worked with a couple of those?
No, well, Pukwudgies tend to stay more in the woods and they're smaller. Your biggest Pukwudgie is probably only a foot tall, whereas the Nain Rouge is described as being the size of a 4-foot child.
All that stuff's awesome, and we appreciate you coming on and talking to us about that. I think I learned a couple of things tonight from you.
I know I did.
Awesome.
We'll look for you at the next Paracon, Crypticon, whatever that might be. Are you going to the Crypticon in Lexington?
November.
I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. We'll I won't there. Be there as a presenter, but I might just go down to check it out. Depends on how the weather is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, awesome. November is when the cold weather starts to come in and pretty much can ruin everything. So.
Right.
Well, we'll look for you regardless when we're out and about. But
okay, excellent.
Do you have a website for the magazine or something we can give to her?
You can find myself and the magazine, Squatch GQ magazine, on Facebook, on Amazon. There is a website that's just kind of like a landing page for the magazine that gives information about what each one of the magazines is about. I have a Chetan Noir cryptozoologist website, so people can find me on Facebook or Amazon or just by Googling Squatch GQ magazine or my name, Chetan Noir.
Okay, cool.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah,
it was very interesting. I'm glad to hear about that mermaid thing. I'm going to check into that some more. That's pretty cool.
Yes, it's very interesting.
All right, it's good talking to you. You take care.
Thanks, Chetan.
You're welcome.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm glad we brought Chetan on. She's just got so much information, you know.
Me too. Yeah, she's very knowledgeable. I'm sure a lot of people will get a lot of good information out of this episode.
Yes, definitely. And I do want to check out her magazine, Squatch GQ. And for the listeners, if you're able to, grab a copy and see what it's all about. It looks like a really well-done magazine from what I can see.
Yeah, yeah. Look her up on Facebook and ChetanNoir.com, I think she said.
Yep, or just maybe Google Squatch GQ.
Or Squatch, yeah. Check Google Magazine.
And while you're at it, they can Google our website, Brian.
They can Google our website. It is www.cryptidcreatures.net.
Awesome.
It is like a one-stop shopping for all things cryptid creatures. So go check us out.
Yeah, you guys can go there. You can tell us about your encounter. You can just type it out and send it to us, and we'll check it out. We'd love to hear from you, and we appreciate you guys listening.
All of you, all the time. Thank you again.
Right on, man. Until next time, brother, I will talk to you later.
Yep, yep. See ya.